All right, we're at the Visual Studio Extensibility Conference. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
I'm Paramesh. I'm the Product Unit Manager of the Visual Studio Platform and Ecosystem Team.
Okay.
I'm Rico Mariani. I'm the Chief Architect of Visual Studio.
Okay. So what did you guys... You guys just got out of a session. What did you talk about?
So I did an introduction. Basically, I gave a historical context on how Visual Studio has been used primarily at Microsoft to be a great development experience for our platforms, and then how it is actually evolving through the introduction and integration with our external partners, and how we have had a successful run with extensions and where we're going forward.
Okay.
And then I introduced Rico, who actually gave a talk on Let Rico Answer.
I talked about the future of Visual Studio, how we're thinking about our architectural investments, the five big sort of architectural themes: frugal, scalable, extensible, modern, connected.
So let's take some time real quick just to go through some of those.
That was too fast?
Yeah, yeah. So what are the big five?
So I started, well, especially because this is the VSX conference, I started by talking about our extensibility story and how we want to have extensibility throughout the product. Traditionally, we've had extensibility sort of at the core. It's hard to say Visual Studio is not extensible because
right.
The whole thing's an extension.
Right.
But, you know, the extensions, they need to be extensible too, and there needs to be a more uniform story and more pervasive, and also a managed story. Our customers are very keen on having a managed extensibility story. And less calm. So that's a big part of our extensibility story. That's one of the pillars.
Okay.
You want me to go into the others?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I'm the perf guy, and I've, Channel 9's interviewed me before several times because of my performance work, and it turns out I didn't forget everything I learned about performance when I took this job. And so we're doing a lot of work around scalability and frugality in the IDE. In order to pay for some of the extensions that we want to make in other areas, we want to take a dependency on WPF because we think it's important. We want to take a dependency on the managed stack. We think it's important. But there's some cost associated with those, and so we think that there's many areas where we could be doing better with performance that we can use to help pay down those costs so that we actually can come out ahead in many scenarios.
Okay.
Not universally, but I think our overall performance experience should continue to be a very good one. We made a lot of progress in 2008, and I don't want to give that back. So those themes that we need to be scalable, we're talking about 10,000 projects in a solution, 50,000 files in a project, those kinds of scalability numbers. And frugal, you know, making sure that we're not using quadratic algorithms for dependency management, in some cases, better heap allocation strategies. There's various things we could be doing to help pay down those costs.
And in terms of, well, I'll let you actually finish some of the other key.
So the other two key points were modern. And for instance, some people think we're crazy to take a dependency on WPF because, you know, well, it's not tried technology, yada yada. But, you know, first of all, I'm a big believer in dog fooding, you know, and I've talked to Charles at length about that. Last time he interviewed me, there was like not one dog food, not dog fooded product in my office at the moment. I had dog food utopia, maybe the opposite of utopia.
Dystopia,
yeah. So we have a responsibility to use our own latest technologies and to drive WPF to the next level of excellence. And partly because I don't think GDI is the last word in graphics, and we want to enable modern experiences, taking advantage of the graphics acceleration that's available on today's cards. And that's just one of the things we want to take advantage of. But driving WPF to the level of excellence that it needs to be at so that it can support a flagship application. Blend is a great application.
Right.
But it's not a flagship application. It's not like the third biggest application at Microsoft. Blend did fantastic things for WPF, and we think even more good stuff is going to happen in WPF and in Visual Studio because of us taking a dependency. It's a bit of a bold thing to do, but, you know, again, I think we can pay for our WPF costs with savings elsewhere. You know, we don't expect WPF to be free. You know, you can't allocate those DirectX surfaces and expect to pay nothing for them, but we believe that the experience that you get is worth the cost and that we can make savings in other places to help pay down that cost so that our customers continue to get a great experience in all the dimensions. And so that's important. How the themes tend to support one another. It's important to be frugal and scalable so that you can afford to be modern.
Right.
Right? And not have to compromise all over the place.
And none of those should be an afterthought.
Exactly. Exactly. They all play one to another. The last is connected.
Okay.
And so we talked about ideas for different services that we could be using and having Visual Studio be a first-class participant in software plus services and kind of you know, what my vision looks like there. A lot of it is, it was about my vision, because it's not a product plan talk. It can't be, you know.
Right.
I'm the chief architect, and I can talk about what I think are the key investment areas and what I think the future looks like broadly and how we think about the investments over the course of many years and what we think is important and what we think is less important. But, you know, a lot more people have to get involved, like people like him, before we decide what's in any given release and what we can really afford. The important thing is that we want to continue making investments in a way that accrues value over several releases.
Okay. So it's not just Dev 10. It's,
yeah, so that's exactly what I was about to say. It's not just, you know, coming up with some vision that says in the next 15 to 18 months we're going to get all of these done and then move on.
Right.
It's a multi-year, multi-release kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Rico has been instrumental in actually figuring out what the key pillars are around which we need to stay connected. And there will be some enhancements, but none of these would be taken back. That's the point that he's trying to make.
Yeah.
For
okay.
example, being frugal is not something that can go away. Being
right.
connected cannot be taken off.
We can stop being frugal now.
Yeah. Or
we're
you
done
know,
being frugal.
Or right. you can say, you know, you cannot say that, okay, I don't want to be modern. I want to go back to where we were, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Right. Now, in terms of application support, are you all thinking about it like a down-level experience? Like, if somebody doesn't have WPF, here's... They can still use the IDE. There won't be terrible performance. Or is there sort of like a tiered way? Because you can imagine somebody that doesn't have a modern graphics machine, say using Windows Server 2008 as their primary developer box, may not have the best graphics for that.
There are issues. I mean, you know, using WPF isn't a complete rosy picture. We are going down level to XP in this version.
Okay.
But we're building on the latest version of the framework, and so we expect it should be running on a machine that's capable enough to run that. You know, I'm not going to run on 1998 era hardware, for instance. Okay. I mean, obviously that's kind of nuts. But we are going to be targeting, you know, what we believe are the mainstream developer boxes, and we're going to be pretty clear that to get the best experience, you want to have graphics accelerated machines and so forth. But you know, that doesn't really scare me these days. You know, you don't have to have a super card in order to get good mileage out of WPF. And, of course, there's flexibility in theming and so forth, and so, you know, you should be able to configure the product in such a way that it doesn't use, you know, a gig of texture memory or whatever.
Okay.
I mean, it's not, you know, it's not World of Warcraft. Okay, but we do think there's a place for use of alpha blending and the high-end features that you get from those things. We don't think GDI is the last word in computer graphics. And so, you know, if you have a card that only has GDI accelerations, you know, so the 2D accelerations, you'll probably be less happy with this version of the product than you would have been, you know, say in years past. But
over time, I think the point is that, you know, there will be enough reason for people to be excited about what they're coming out with. It's not like we're going to force people to move it. It's just that they will find that the value add to the product through these things would be good enough.
Look at it this way. The 2008 product looks a lot like the 1998 product.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't think that's a good thing. And I don't want the 2010 product to look a whole lot like the 1998 product. I mean, I think it's time that we started being a little bit more modern. And maybe that's a little bold thing to do. But I think that's necessary. I mean, we've done a lot with this particular look, and it's time to start embracing some of the more modern techniques. I mean, if you look at the 1998 product and put it side by side with the 1988 product, okay, those products don't look anything. You know, I was saying in my talk, are you sure that your mom could tell the 1998 product from the 2008 product? And not everyone's sure their mom could tell. I mean, they're different, but
sure.
Could mom spot which one is the 2008 product? Sometimes not. But certainly she could tell the 1988 product from the 1998 product. And we have to make investments. I mean, the world of user experience has moved on, and we won't do it all at once. You know,
that's the thing. It's not like we're going to completely repaint and say that, okay, you know what, everything that we had, the experience that we had, we're going to throw everything out, and here comes a completely new thing, we're going to confuse the people. No, that's not the intent.
We had some WPF in the 2008 product, like for the, obviously the WPF designer. Okay, so there's some WPF, and there'll be more WPF in this version, and in more crucial scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you'll tend to see more of that.
And that's why I want to reiterate that this is a multi-cycle kind of evolution.
Right. Now, in terms of people actually using these tools now, like, where do you see, because extensibility is kind of interesting in that you have internal customers using your tools as well as external. So in terms of feedback, because I know a lot of the internal teams are still using, say, C++ or still looking to do I'd say, old school GDI graphics. Do you have a lot of internal teams dog fooding some of the new technologies you're releasing in extensibility?
Well, we have huge participation internally, whether we like it or not, because so many people depend on the IDE. But almost universally, people want the extensibility story to be simpler. And almost universally, people want us to have managed APIs for their extensibility needs. The biggest customers of extensibility, the ones that are doing all new wholesale packages, are the ones that are most excited about staying in the classic world. We're not giving up the classic extensibility models. Mm-hmm. They're going to be there. But those aren't the places where we're going to invest the most. So you can expect the balance to start tipping towards, you know, more managed. And so if you look at it today, for instance, we have the managed package framework, which is a way of having a managed layer shim you to the classic world, if you like.
Right.
Okay. In the future, it'll start to be the reverse, right? What will happen is more and more things will become managed. Like in this version, it's the editor. The editor's going managed. And so the old editor interfaces were offering some shimming for compatibility for our existing clients. And so it's the reverse. There's classic interface, classic style interfaces to get to the managed objects.
Interesting.
But we really believe that the managed way is the way our customers want us to go. And our reliance on WPF is, you know, going to do that. I mean, we want to bet on what we think our best platform strategy is right now, and that's the managed stack. So,
and how do you all work with partners? Because I know there's certain levels of the VSIP program, like to have, I guess, partners dog fooding this stuff. Are you dropping them build so that they can see some of the new additions or new interfaces you all are putting out? Or
so we haven't started dropping builds yet. There are a couple of teams inside Microsoft who have actually started looking at what the new editor is like, but we don't have bits that we have actually given to people yet. But over the course of the next few months, as these things start gelling together and we start turning features on, we will be starting to distribute bits. And for the some of the key partners, we will start engaging them sooner rather than later. And our desire is by the time we get to beta 1 and then beta 2, a lot of the partners will know where we're going, and we want to encourage some of the partners to actually have extensions that are available at the time that we actually
That's a big deal. Right. So we've been disclosing our plans for a long time, and people have been asking, you know, give us the bits as soon as you can, obviously, because there's some significant changes and significant opportunities. I mean, a lot of people are just drooling to get their hands on the new editor, for instance, which is great. But, you know, we don't want to give them a broken editor. I mean, it has to be substantially plugged in and the language service is wired to it. And so we have some work to do beforehand. But by the time this video is available to people, I think the first partners will maybe already even be having bits.
During the course of this week, we'll be talking to some of the partners and showing some of the bits off to them.
Yep.
Excellent.
And like I said, in the next three to 6 months, we'll be engaging more and more of the partners. And as we actually talked about earlier, we're not going to be able to do all of this ourselves.
Right.
We need extensions from people, not just to light up what we're doing, but also for us to hear about what kind of things that they want us to help fix before we launch Dev 10. And then moving forward, what the pain points are likely to be or what the extensions are likely to look like. And things like that.
Yeah, it sounds like you already know at least some of the pain points. So, I mean, do you all know when Calm goes away? Like, is it Dev 10? Is it Dev 11? When do you get out of registry hell and all those?
Some of the stuff we can help with immediately. I mean, we have a registry-free package deployment strategy, and that'll be in the flagship release. And I think that's already available in the service pack, actually. But that's only part of it.
Yes, it's a very small part of it.
That's only part of it. I mean, when you say, when does Calm go away, and is Calm really the problem? I mean, I don't think Calm is going away anytime soon. And there's so many services in the IDE, for instance. And many of these are high-quality, perfectly good services. So should we just throw the baby out with the bathwater? I mean, so what you do is you say, okay, where are areas where we want to have a new experience? Where can we do something with a superior extensibility model? Where is the gap for a modern experience? Are some of these interfaces getting in the way of, for instance, taking advantage of MiniCore? Okay. So then we would target those. The thing that people really complain about, and the one that I want to get rid of the soonest, isn't Calm per se, but the STA implications that some of the Calm components bring.
Right.
And having more sort of model view controller separation, so that I can have high concurrency models and still keep causality and maybe even STA in a bunch of places where it's not so painful in the display. right? I mean, you can't just throw concurrency everywhere because then you type ABCD and you get DCBA and customers get very upset. So, I mean, there's a reason why single-threadedness is prevalent in heavy user interface applications. It makes a whole bunch of problems go away. So, but okay, I need to get rid of STA because it's killing me in many different dimensions and preventing, limiting my ability to innovate in a bunch of different ways. So, you know, you can expect to see STA being addressed and having alternative models for doing display and so forth long before I think.
But I thought WPF was STA. Or is that?
Even though WPF is, and so is User 32, and so is everything else, that doesn't mean that you still can't have a separation between the part that's doing the drawing and providing events, which still needs to be single-threaded, if only to help you with causality, right? Because you need your events in order. But if your models are concurrent, you can dispatch background work in a fairly consistent way and say, oh, we're doing a profile in the background, we're doing syntax checking in the background, and we provide updates to the UI thread in a, sort of a, an asynchronous kind of way, right? So the main thread is still running, it's doing its thing. The analogy I make is like how many game engines work. You know, the UI, there's a thread that's doing the UI, and it does the UI and nothing but the UI. And not every game is architected this way, of course, but, you know, but sort of a mental model. And then you have, like, the physics engine in the back and sound in the back and other kinds of things, and they're working on the objects and manipulating them. But the view always has kind of the latest ready-to-roll bits, and it can respond to keyboard and so forth and get work queued up independent of the state of the background universe. But in order for that
so that way you won't get, say, like, the regular hangs or, well, not say regular, but when you say F1 and it first needs to load up
Takes forever.
The Explorer.
Yeah. So, I mean, some of that is just helping with delays. But in many cases, there's a whole pile of synchronous operations that could be asynchronous.
Right.
I mean, there's a bunch of lexical analysis that's happening on the main thread. A lot of compilation work happens on the main thread or is synchronized with the main thread. If you look at the parallelism, it's not that we have a shortage of threads in the IDE. We have plenty of threads, but it's like they run a relay race. You know, one thread hands off to the next one, and there's only one baton. So 12 threads are involved, but only one person is running it at a given time.
Effectively, it's a single thread.
It's effectively single threaded. It's a medley relay, is what it is.
Pico loves to talk about
that. So, sometimes I run around the room to illustrate. But we have plenty of threads, but we don't have a whole lot of concurrency, and there's a lot we could do if we separate what needs to be synchronous, what needs to interface with the user, which is where, you know, the STA models begin. Get the state off of those objects and separate it separately and get separation between the controllers, which can initiate asynchronousness, and have high-quality models in the background. Models in the sense of model view controller, not in the sense of, like, domain-specific languages.
So in terms of doing this, like somebody that wants to implement an extension, are you going to have design patterns, or is it going to be like the API is just going to have this? Like, how do you make it really easy for somebody to follow your best practices without, say, you know, shooting themselves in the foot or adding somebody else to the relay race?
Well, yeah, okay. So first, we want to make it easier for people to plug in generally. And so going to more of a declarative import-export model where you say, here's where I want to plug in, and here's the imports that I want to hook up to. And those come with an appropriate threading contract. So, you know, these people that import that interface get notified. So you don't have to think about the threads. I mean, to the extent that anybody has to think about a lot of threading, it just becomes hopeless. So we believe that there will be several different kinds of extension points for different kinds of things, whether you're extending documents by composition or views by extension, and that you'll be called in the appropriate context. Where you initiate controller-like behavior responding to events and you want asynchronousness, you know, we need to have an appropriate pool that you can queue that work on and that people can then participate in, where they in turn register via these metadata kinds of hookups. So the idea is to have the appropriate fabric there for people to plug in so that they don't have to worry about getting it wrong. You know, I'm big all about pit of success. I mean, I coined the phrase.
Right.
You know, it has to be hard to get it wrong. The default way, the normal, natural way of plugging things together has to just work. And if you have to think about it a whole lot, you know, it's a big failure.
Right.
Now, I do think that people writing some of these more common substrates, the flagship substrates, like the text document representation or the language models on top of that, those people are going to have to think pretty hard about how to get the right level of concurrency in those models. But we'd like to get those done once and for all. And anybody can then build on top of the text models. And they don't have to think about the concurrency. You can use SQL Server without having to know anything about their locking strategy. You don't have to know, oh, they have all this escalation policy, yada, yada. You update your rows, and you know they're going to do a good job, and they're going to lock at the appropriate different levels, and they have a metaphor. And you just have to understand their overall model. You don't have to know the details of how many monitors they have on how many pages and when they coalesce and when they don't. And it has to be a lot more like that, where there's a solid model underneath that you can program to.
But tactically, going back to your question, the answer is yes. For your three or four questions, the answer is really yes. So as Rico said, we're going to take away the need for them to actually go in and actually go figure out how really needs to happen,
mm-hmm.
whether they have to pay attention to the concurrency and stuff like that. But we are also going to try to provide as much prescriptive guidance as possible to ensure that people do not go and land themselves in hot water.
Good samples are crucial.
And we are seriously working towards that. And the previous question you actually asked about the registry cleanup, and you asked the question, is the registry hell going to go away? We are taking steps.
Okay.
Trying to make sure that we are doing as much cleanup as possible to ensure that the install and uninstall experience is reasonably clean. Some of it is going to happen in Dev 10, some of it in the next release, and some of it is going to happen in the release after. So just to make sure that people understand that we haven't forgotten about it. It's a key thing that we are focusing on.
Right.
But it's not going to happen overnight.
Okay. And you mentioned some of the things around samples. And just in your SQL Server example, a lot of people use, say, query plan. Like, are you all planning, like, to visualize, and in terms of, like, being the performance guy, do you plan tools where, wow, I can see how long does it take for my add-in to load, how much, like, am I doing bad allocations, or what things can somebody use to, say, profile their add-in? Because right now, I think there's a great support for F5 in, say, I'm building a new Visual Studio shell or an extension, but it's really hard to say whether it works, or some of the issues with when you have 10 extensions.
Yeah.
Like, you actually see a performance degradation. Like, what things are you all thinking around there?
The most important thing is sameness. I mean, if we simplify the interfaces so that all the different project systems extend the same way, then you don't have to get it right four or five different times for each different project system that you want to extend. So right there, that's a lot of relief. Getting on the managed stack is going to help because we can get on top of the managed tools for tracking memory allocation and lots of different problems that we've had in the past relate to consumption and inability to track consumption or inability to find leaks or wonky wild pointers and wonky unload scenarios. And many of those problems just go away if we get on the managed stack. But part of what you're coming down to comes down to fundamental tooling that's available for performance analysis in the large for flagship applications and for this platform in particular. But I have good news there, too. I mean, the ETW tools are now available.
What are ETW?
Enterprise Tracing for Windows.
Okay.
On Vista, you get an unprecedented amount of visibility into what the operating system is doing and to correlating what you're doing with what the operating system is doing. And we can tie it all the way back to in or out of the managed stack with call stack, sampling down to the kernel, you know, down to file events, any kind of consumption. If you've heard me talk about performance analysis, and you mentioned performance, so you're getting a lecture, right?
Of course.
Yeah, but performance analysis is about accounting for your consumption, right? That's really, you know, in a few words, that's what it is. And so you need to be able to attribute not just the compute cost, but the disk cost, memory cost, network cost, if applicable, mm-hmm. and charge it to the right piece of code. So if you have a clear extension model, going back to Visual Studio, and you're on the latest, greatest platform stuff, then the tools are going to help you the most. And you're going to be seeing general tools around the ETW family of eventing and analysis that should give you unprecedented visibility. I mean, you can literally track every disk I.O., every single disk I.O., and find out where they came from for modest cost, with no instrumentation at all. Just run it, get a trace, and then see where they came from. Even on a production box if you have the appropriate privileges, which is fabulous. So some of the things that used to take me weeks, you know, to get an appropriate analysis of, I can, like, knock them off in 5 or 10 minutes. And I think our customers are going to start seeing that, too, with regard to tooling. So, you know, we're in the tooling business. So obviously when we make improvements in our tooling infrastructure, it benefits you know, our own extensibility and our extension authors as much as anyone else doing plugins anywhere else.
So when is the package load failure die? Do you guys have a predicted date? Can we have a little tombstone built for when you're never going to have a package load failure again?
Well,
is it too early?
Packages can
fail. Do we need another 5 years? Lots of reasons, 10 years?
Yeah.
What things you can do to sort of make it just so you don't get that nasty gram and then, you know, nothing happens.
Yeah, so some of the more exotic...
Isolation, perhaps.
Okay, there you go. So some things we can do something about right away. A lot of package failures inevitably have to do with the fact that the registry wasn't appropriately set up. Well, if we make it easier to set up the registry properly and we make that state disposable and reconstructable, then, you know, you just... That problem kind of problem goes away.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, does that equal all package load failures end? Well, you know, that's like saying, when do all blue screens go away? Well, you know, when I can control every bit of every device driver, maybe I can tell you that. I think we'll always have some kind of package composition failures. Even if we were on a great extensibility model, I think it'll always be the case that people will find combinations of extensions that don't compose. But I think... The important thing is that it should be more diagnosable. You should be able to see what's going on, what
exactly
happened. Oh, I see. The apples don't mix with the oranges. I have to have only apples or oranges loaded.
Well, that's the second part of it. The first part of it being you're making sure that people don't create stuff that causes themselves to get landed in this kind of...
Don't shoot yourself in the foot.
Yeah,
basically,
so
that's what it is. So, you know, providing the right architecture, providing the right level of guidance, making sure that the obvious cases are taken care of.
So we can do a lot.
It's happening in Dept End, the next release, and then over the next version as well, the version that follows as well.
Are you all adding any sort of instrumentation? Because this was sort of the classic when Vista came out, where they could actually instrument and see, like, Windows error reporting. They knew that, you know, a large percentage was based on, you know, certain vendors' video drivers were the cause of failure.
Mm-hmm.
Are you all looking at some of that stuff?
We have the same kind of SQIM data that other products do. And
okay.
I think we're starting to look at that in a much more serious kind of way. We certainly were using it for planning this time around.
Yep. Across the board.
And for failure management across the... But that's across the board. And it's... I don't know. It's not even necessarily a platform thing. Visual Studio platform thing. It's just all the parts of Visual Studio.
Yeah, feature by feature, you know, we're having
people have
take
to look
at
that
what
stuff.
They're doing.
But I mean,
all the way from setup.
Systemically.
To...
Yeah.
Systemically, there's things that tend to go wrong around setup, and those are the ones we're targeting.
Yeah, so how are you making setup easy? Because this is another classic one where, man, we're going to drop some, you
Less
know, CTP,
actions.
Somebody wants to play with it, and then they download some other, another
right.
team downloads another
so
add-in.
So the next release, there are a few things we're specifically working on. I do not want to talk about them yet, but 3 months from
it's
now...
It's something you're working on.
Yes, something I'm working on. 3 months from now, we'll have a lot more clarity.
Yeah.
I can tell you this. There are going to be some changes that will make life a lot easier. Yeah.
Excellent. Something to look forward to.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have to grab you guys again.
Yeah, setup is... Well, you're not the first person who mentioned that the setup experience could be better.
Rico and I spent a lot of time talking about...
Turns out.
We beat, we beat each other up.
Yeah, I've only been working with him for like a month or so, and he's already been... beating me up. It didn't take him very long to
No, it's just annoying.
Yeah.
He feels at least as much pain and I'm sure significantly more passion than I do in fixing these problems. So
yeah. That's a big one. And a lot of, you know, I try to take a simplify approach, make it hard to get it wrong. And
yeah.
That's the kind of thing you're
That's doing. A great way of saying it.
Yeah. Just make it harder to get it wrong. You know, because if you follow the normal prescriptions, then many of the problems of the past should just go away and that's the best way to solve it, you know, make it simpler, not make it more complicated.
Okay. So I'm going to give you guys the tough question. So Visual Studio Shell came out, and it's actually been great in that anybody can sort of pick up and build their own IDE, and there's a couple on CodePlex.
Yep.
But do you all see that as sort of the future of Windows applications, or where do you see, especially in comparing it to, say, Eclipse, which has their rich client platform, where instead of just building a Windows application, you get all these things for free. So you get a file load, unload, you get a text editor if you need it. You get all these wonderful features in Visual Studio Shell. Is that something you all are looking at, or is that something in the future? Or what's sort of the future of Visual Studio Shell, and where do you see it? Is it an application for Windows developers, or is it an application for tool developers?
I think it's both.
That is true.
I think it's both.
I hesitated a little bit because I didn't want to take the cop out and say it is both. But
yeah.
Seriously, I think it is
you,
both.
You can use it to make visual whatever you want. Okay? Mm-hmm. And the position we've taken in the past with the PPE is it has all the stuff in it that you probably want if you're making visual whatever it is that you're making.
Lock, yeah.
Right.
But that's only a piece of it. And there's a whole family of people that they just want a rich plug-in framework with some, you know, reusable components. And maybe they want to use some of our components. And maybe they want some of those components to work in the IDE or not in the IDE. And maybe they want different classes of experience. Maybe they just want it to look different. Maybe they want a simplified experience, or maybe they want, you know, a more graphical experience, or one that's, you know, more friendly to a different kind of user, or maybe one that's very friendly to developers, because that's a big customer segment of theirs. And so you can go many different directions with this.
So the way I look at it also is like the Windows developer, rather than re-implementing their own toolbar system, rather than re-implementing graphics and re-implementing all these things,
right.
There's just so many things that they get for free.
Yes.
Where a Windows application developer may say, wow, we can, you know, we can be 50% of the way done with our application just because all this stuff is done.
Yep. See, it's one thing to say I need a toolbar, okay? And there's a ton of different ways to get a toolbar.
Right.
But the next thing you have to say is, well, what if I need an extensible toolbar?
Right.
Now what do I do?
Right.
Well, you know, those are harder to come by. And then I need an extension framework. And how do I define my extensions? Oh, now I'm going to make up my whole extension model. Well, you know, now you start thinking, you know, there's one out there that's project types for it. My guys will know how to do it. And maybe they've already been writing extensions for Visual Studio. They can write their flagship code for whatever it is that they're doing, you know, in that same model. That's a good thing. And so I'd like to see a lot of convergence, even inside Microsoft on that shell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can imagine, without me saying anything, I think you can imagine certain products in developer division that I think might benefit from being on a unified shell.
So you actually raise an interesting question. This is very tactical as far as I'm concerned. What we need to do from within my team is to actually reach out to the proper messaging on where the shell is headed.
Yeah.
Yes.
Once we have that messaging out, I think it'll become obvious to people why Rick was saying what he's saying.
Cadence, servicing, we have to have an answer for all that stuff.
Yeah, servicing is another great
one. One of our customers mentioned a great point, end-of-lifing, you know, because if they're going to build on it, they have to know, well, how long are we going to service it for? And,
sure.
You know, some of these things we haven't really talked about a whole lot, because we were thinking about it in the context of Visual Foo, and, well, you'll do another Visual Foo in 2 years or whatever, but if you're using it to build a tool that you're going to run your enterprise on, then you might like to know that we're going to service it for...
Yeah,
however many
number
years.
Of years, whatever.
And, you know, and here's our contract, and here's how you get support, and yada, yada. I mean, we need to have an answer for all these different things if we're going to be serious about making this a platform. And so you can expect to see those. I mean, you can expect to see answers.
The good news is there's somebody on the team who's thinking, eating, living, breathing this.
Excellent.
Challenges around the show.
Well, several somebodies, I think.
there's one person that I have on point for this, so.
How many people are actually doing the extensibility, or is it hard to tell because there's such a separation between different teams?
When you're from within Microsoft? Or?
Yeah, within DevDiv, right.
I don't have an answer to that, do you?
Do you want to know how many developers are working on extensibility? How many customers do we have?
And Microsoft.
Yeah. He's talking about in Microsoft.
In Microsoft.
Yeah, but even there, because there's bunches we don't even know about.
Yeah,
there's probably at least six major teams, you know.
SQL Server obviously being
SQL
one
Server
of them.
Being one of them, but like don't forget Game Studio, for instance.
Yeah.
So they're coming out of the woodwork. In small ways, there's many people, but I'd say there's maybe half a dozen people that have, you know, a large-scale dependency on VS in some way internally that are sort of not, like, directly, you know, bolted onto us. There's different stuff in CSD and server and tools. I mean, if you go... I guess it tends to fall off the further away you get from DevDiv. Like, if you're still in Valmuglia's org, then there's more, and then there's it's sort of like there's a half-life. You know? You can almost measure it in the distance from building 41, you know, the probability that they have one. But, you know, there's one in MSN, and then there's, of course, Game Studio, and they're pretty organizationally distant from us. So there's lots.
Okay.
It's really good for us, because in many cases, the SQL team in particular... has really pushed the envelope.
They've been very close.
Which is fabulous, because, you know, those are problems, that's dog fooding, right? Those are problems that we solve because we had an internal customer that our other customers don't have to deal with, and it makes our architecture that much better. You know, every time we try to rise to the challenge of a new internal partner, it just results in goodness for the platform. And that's always been the case. The trick is to just not take too many all at once so that you don't, you know, go insane and you make none of them happy. But to be pretty aggressive about picking one up. The CLR's kind of been doing the same thing over the years. More and more managed code, more and more prevalent in the company. Originally, a lot of hand-holding, you know, but now lots of people can take dependencies, core dependencies on managed code without having to have, you know, the CLR architects on speed dial.
Okay.
And so we want to be in the same kind of world. We're a platform technology, and we don't want people to need us to be on speed dial, but we also want those flagship customers that are going to push the envelope for us.
Excellent. Great. Thanks, guys. Appreciate
it. Thank you very much.
Hey, Dan.